Whenever we think of great Cher impersonators, we think of Candy Stratton, the trans pioneer who became one of American Airlines' first openly trans flight attendants back in 1989.
Candy came on the podcast way back in 2009, right after she won Miss American Goddess. And now, 10 years later, at the tender age of 56, she has a new title under her belt, Miss Trans USA.
Today, the incredibly delightful Candy Stratton joins us to chat about her amazing career flying the friendly skies and her journey from a baby showgirl at Lacage to a role as Miss Trans USA.
Plus, John Travolta gives the VMA award to drag queen J. Jolie instead of Taylor Swift.
How to become a great Cher impersonator.
And bridging the divide between LGBTQ people.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Who's Rue Lalenska?
I Googled her to figure out what movie she was in or who the hell she was. Because you remember when you were a kid?
I'm Rue Lalenska.
We're all like, who the hell is Rue Lalenska?
And before I get on an airplane, I have to use my VO5 hairspray. And you're like, what the fuck is wrong with her voice? That bitch has just smoked a whole pack of, you know, something. And not Virginia Slims either, honey.
Well, she was a European model and actress. But I was like, what movie she was in? She was in the movie Queen Kong.
Really?
Which is like a terrible, low budget movie. And it's like, and
so
it's a female
career.
Queen Kong. And it's just like, it's terrible.
Look, so is her career.
Hey, folks, our guest today is one of the best known Cher impersonators, trans pioneers, and a smile in the friendly skies as a flight attendant, Candy Stratton.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Welcome back to Feast of Fun.
Oh, my God. It's been, the last time was 2009, was it?
It was a decade ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a little show called RuPaul's Drag Race was on the air.
Yeah.
And you came on the show to talk about your experiences as a drag performer.
I think
you were 18.
Yeah. Oh,
legal.
That's right. 18. Legal.
Your parents gave you permission.
That was really nice of them. I love them for that. You know, they've always been supportive.
And you were friends with two of the people from the first season of RuPaul's Drag Race. It was Jade and I think it was BB.
It was BB because I was working with BB in the 90s up in Minneapolis. And oh my God, that was so funny. She played it off the whole way through, but it was pretty odd that she had this huge party before the premiere of the show, or I think it was the night of the premiere. She did this premiere party, and she had this whole production go on where they lifted her like Queen of Sheba or Cleopatra and did this procession in, and we're all like, wow, just because you're on the TV show. I knew right then and there she had won, and she kept saying,
Now, they actually do it to audition. You were a fan favorite.
They did. So they actually called. And I even said to the guy, his name was Christian. I remember his name. And he said to me, he goes, oh, Rue wants you to, you know, go and join this website where, you know, you get your friends to vote for you and whoever gets the most votes. And I said, you know, I'm post-op trans. I'm sure that you don't want me. He goes, oh, no, Rue knows who you are, wants you on there, really. But what they really were wanting is, because Logo wasn't really well known back then, they want a really big names to be on there and get you people to vote. And it worked. Mm-hmm. It really got, you know, the community, you know, to really notice that the show was coming on, and then Nina Flowers won, which, you know, well deserved. And so that's how they've really got people interested in the show. And Logo, it was very smart.
Mm. Candy, what started first for you? Were you a flight attendant first, or you consider yourself a drag performer first?
So, yes. I wasn't a flight attendant first because I didn't become flight attendant until after my surgery in 89 at 26.
Your nose surgery.
Yes, my nose surgery. Like everybody else is now on RuPaul's Drag Race. You know,
you don't have to contour your nose anymore.
Well, actually, it's my same nose that I've had since I was little. I'll show you a picture. But, you know, I still do. You know, got to contour. Because what's Lady
Bunny's... It has to be like a pinpoint your nose.
What's Lady Bunny's song? Nose, nose, nose. Nose.
Yeah. Based on Vogue, yeah.
Yeah, I love her.
So your original path started out as a performer.
It did. Okay. It did. So, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. Since I started talking around 3, I was telling my mom and dad that I was a girl. Mm-hmm. I was adopted by 2 amazing parents and very religious, very Republican. And, you know, as soon as I could start talking, my mom told me this years later, I knew that I wanted to be a girl. I always wanted to be a girl. I identified as a girl. I just, you know, there'd be all the boys playing football and I'd be over there playing with Barbies. And, you know, I became a professional dancer, studied dance and as a boy, and I saw my first drag show. And I,
How did you see your first drag show? How did that happen?
So back then, because I'm 56 now, I know I don't look it, but you know, I just had a facelift, but
you look fantastic.
I love you. Yeah, but
you do look great.
You've always looked good though.
Oh, you guys are sweet. You're my
best
friend.
The legs are the last to go. Hush. For dancers. You want to stay young, you got to dance.
Yep. And my legs have gone. So anyway, I have both of them. My hips replaced already. But so, you know, it was here in Chicago back when the drinking age was 18, because when I was 17, you know, I learned at an early age that, you know, if you're a cute little boy, you know, with a wink and a smile to the doorman, you could get in. Mm-hmm. And I did. And we went to La Cage, which used to be down on Oak Street. And I went and saw the show at La Cage. It used to be Barbara Eden's bar. And
Barbara Eden's bar?
Yeah.
The actress from I Dream a Genie?
Yeah.
She used to hang out there, or she was an owner?
She owned the bar beforehand, and then she was leasing it out to these guys, and they opened up La Cage. I think
had no idea. Yeah. Barbara Eden from I Dream a Genie owned a gay bar.
No, it wasn't gay when she owned it.
It was a performance bar.
No, it was a straight bar.
It was a straight
bar. And then she leased it out to these guys and then sold it, and then the guys that were running it actually ran it into the ground, and the IRS came and closed us one day because they weren't paying their taxes. Mm. But so she didn't have any part of our show part. But so I went and saw my first drag show. Being a professional dancer, I saw these drag queens. They did torch song after torch song. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, this is boring. I can't do better than this. I went to the Baton on a Sunday night. They had amateur night. I lied and said I was, at this point, it was 18. And I said, oh, you know, I miss teenage New York. I lied to them.
Yeah.
I told them this story, this made up story. Mm-hmm. And they're like looking at me going, well, girl, I wouldn't tell anybody that you're Miss Teenage New York. It's now 21. You can't be in here if you're here. I'm like, oh. And one of my friends painted me because I just knew right then and there I could all of a sudden be able to express my inner female side of me to the world. And, you know, immediately being a dancer, it went over. And then I went back to La Cage and I told the managers, I said, listen, and this is how stupid I was. Okay. Not that I'm not still stupid now, but
I am here.
But I went and told the managers, I said, listen, I'm a dancer. Give me a week of an audition. I'll audition for you for free. Who says that? You know, if you don't like me at the end of the week, I'll disappear. Okay. And he's like, oh, stupid free work. Come on in. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't sure what he was going to get in. But I went in that night being a professional dancer. I tore the house down. Mm. And they hired me.
Do you remember
me
the first song you did?
I do. It was Gloria. So, and I went and skipped across that stage and then started spinning and, you know, the first song I did at the Baton though was Tits and Ass from the Chorus Line.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I dated
tits
a girl
and ass. Bought myself a fancy pair.
Just a dash of silicone. Or more.
No lie.
Or a lot of dash.
And so, through all this, you then decided to also become a flight attendant.
That was later.
But not that much later. Well, you were really young when you first.
Right. So I started transitioning at 18. And I told my dad at 17, actually, that I wanted to have my surgery. We were sitting waiting for the train. I lived out in Mount Prospect. And we were waiting for the train for me to go into dance class. And out of nowhere, I had seen my first trans girl being out, and her name was Chanel Dupree. And oh my gosh,
that name rings a bell.
Yeah, she's from Chicago. Yeah, she's former Miss Continental. And this is before I had even gone to the Baton. And I knew it wasn't at La Cage. I'm sorry, it was at Coconuts. Mm-hmm. Do you remember old Coconuts that was on the north side?
I don't remember, but I've read about it in history books.
Right, yeah.
I'm not kidding.
In high school, right, when they were doing their LGBT, you know, education.
It's now required in Illinois.
Thank God. Mm-hmm. That's great.
They'd be like, okay, kids, this is Candy Stratton.
And this is Eddie Dugan. And, you know, so. So, you know, I just looked over at him and I said, Dad, I want a sex change. And without blinking an eye, he goes, okay. He goes, well, let's at least wait till you're 21. That way I know you're sure about it. And he said, besides, it'll give me that long to break it into your mother. And, you know, he knew I wanted it. But and, you know, then I told my mom, and still in the drag world performing at this point, I've already started transitioning hormones and everything. And at 26, you know, I said I was done with the drag pageants. I wanted to go on and do more. And so my parents paid for my surgery. The Dr. Biber out in Colorado was like the main sex change doctor here in Trinidad back mm-hmm. then in the 80s. And he still was a lot of money, like between $15,000 and $20,000 back then. And somebody told us of a doctor over in Brussels that was doing the surgery for $3,000. And my parents paid for it. And my dad went with me. And when I woke up, he was holding my hand and said, how's my daughter doing?
Oh, my God, I'm going to cry. Yeah. This is not, we're not even watching Pose.
Right. But, you know, he was a mate. My parents, this is, you know, something I try to tell parents that ask me questions. I go, you know what? Whether you accept it, whether you understand it, it's not your journey. Mm. It's your child's journey. What you need to do is be there for them through their journey and try to understand and just support them. Okay. Because if you do and you don't discard your child, you know, what's more important, being able to see them grow and live a happy life that they want to live, or burying them because you discarded them?
Candy, how was it possible for your dad, this conservative Republican in this, we're talking like mid 80s.
Yes.
Here. Yeah. You know, when I came out to my parents, they're like, I'm worried you're going to get AIDS and die. You know,
right.
His reaction was to say, let's do it. And holding your hand. I mean, that's an extraordinary visionary person
my dad
that you had
was,
for his father.
My dad was director of personnel for the school districts in Park Ridge.
Okay.
And came from a small town out in near the Quad Cities, Moline Rock Island area. He was a small town out in Andover. And both, like I said, both my parents are very religious, and all my two older sisters and I are all adopted. And with them, you know, no matter what I brought to them, because obviously around 15, I thought I was gay and came out, and, you know, my dad was great. He's like, you know, I don't understand it, but I'm trying to learn, he would say to me, you know, and I don't get it. My mom had a harder time at that point, you know, being from a small town also. And she had a real hard time being very religious, you know, but let me tell you, she made a full 180, you know, not just with my change, but with all my friends and everything. And she supports anybody, you know, anybody that can learn, you know, is willing to open their mind, can learn. Mm. And, you know, I mean, seriously, I'm going to be honest with you, you know, no matter what you believe in, if you're religious or not religious, you know, I truly believe that there is some higher power or just energy out there. And I'm so grateful for that energy putting me in their arms, because, you know, here's the answer to what you asked. My cousin, who is their Southern Baptist, my uncle was a Southern Baptist minister. And after I had my surgery, once I asked my dad, Uncle Pop, you know, Paula, you know, and the Bible. And my dad said, I know what the Bible says, but I also was there through, you know, Paula growing up, and to see, you know, from the moment that she could speak, telling us that she's a girl, you know, both Dorothy and I knew that something was really, you know, with this. And I think a lot of parents that actually will open up their minds, or have opened up their minds to who kids are trans, especially nowadays, you see it. They're like, it's been an education. You can't tell me that your child, you know, is that adamant and doesn't know, you know, and especially from the 60s, you know, when I was born, my mom has often said to me, we didn't know back then. I'm so sorry. And I go, what are you sorry about? I turned out to be a good person. But my dad told my cousin, he said, you know, we went to counseling, we did a lot of praying, and this was the right path for Paula. And this was the right thing. And obviously, I tell people, if you just love your children, no matter what, and support them, maybe not, you know, not support their drug habit, but, you know, sure. But, you know, other things, you know, your child will turn out to be a good person. And I am, you know, living proof of that, as is anybody in the LGB community whose parent, you know, supports them. They turn out to be good people.
It must be a great relief to you to now see like these parents get it and see it and know that they're like raising their kids as just, you know, genderless. You pick what gender you're going to be, or having, you know, affirming their gender.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And like, you know, our little conversation that we had earlier, you know, mm-hmm. about somebody recently at this conference that mm-hmm. said to me, oh, you were a trailblazer. And like I told you, I said, you know, no, I wasn't the trailblazer. Maybe it's Candy Stratton, you know, being open.
Clear, and performer. Yeah.
To be clear, your performer name is Candy Stratton, but you're a professional woman and Candy is hard. Right. It's a hard name to go by.
Yeah, I kind of left her on stage when I had my surgery. So my real name is Paula.
Yeah.
And
it would be fun as like, hi, my name is Candy and I'm your flight attendant.
Oh, trust me. I thought about that and I immediately said, oh no, we're keeping her on stage. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, especially with, you know, my voice being a little different than a lot of, you know, cisgender women, you know, hi, I'm Candy and, you know, welcome aboard, you know, and today we're going to be serving you, you know, free drinks for everybody.
Yeah. I would fly that airline in a
heartbeat.
Well,
just for the drinks, right? Not for my voice.
Oh my God. That's I want to fly on Candy's airline.
Candy Air. Yeah. Okay.
So in terms of applying as a flight attendant, you have a great story about this. And I know you've talked about it here and elsewhere, but can you tell us, like, why, when you were applying for the job as a flight attendant, you decided to tell the recruiter you were trans?
In 1989.
So
first, no one else was trans. They weren't even accepting gay people.
Right. So I had my surgery at 26. Afterwards, I had an interview with Continental. I walked into the big cattle call. You know, this is what they used to do back then. And the minute I walked in, you know, one of the people said, that's a man. And I didn't make it through. So then I got an interview with American Eagle and I went in for the interview and I made it past the group interview, and which then you go on to a one-on-one interview. And I'm still friends with Jeff to this day. And
Jeff was the recruiter.
Yes. And, you know, I told him I was transsexual. He said, wow, that's really brave of you, you know. And
but why did you tell him? Why just keep your mouth shut?
Because I was dumb and young. Young and dumb. And I think
proud of being trans.
Well, I was, and I was also scared. I think I was also scared after the last interview, you know, if they do find out, are they going to kick me out? Mm-hmm. You know, and because seriously, it, you know, if you think about it, back in 89, I didn't hear of a lot of trans women other than Christine Jorgensen, who was, you know, the pioneer in America to go get her surgery way back when. Mm-hmm. But you didn't hear of other people other than you were either a showgirl or streetwalker. You know, which is sad that in my world, that's the only thing I heard about trans girls. I didn't hear about trans, or you did hear about somebody trans that had a job and transitioned in front of any people. And sadly, back then, if you did transition, you know, you were lucky if the company accepted you and kept you. Otherwise, you know, a lot of times when they transitioned, they were fired. Mm-hmm. You know, so I.
And Trump wants that to happen today.
He does. And that's what's scary. And so I, you know, young and dumb, I thought, well, I better tell him so then there's no surprise. And he said, okay, I really appreciate that. And said, I think you're brave. And he said, you know what? You just have to pass the physical, which back then you got in a hospital gown. They prodded and probed everywhere. And guys got prostate exams. And, you know, I didn't get one of those because I didn't think I was a guy. But
Would you have liked one?
Give you a physical?
Well, maybe afterwards. But, you know,
Was he cute, the doctor?
Well, actually. It was the nurse, and she was a nervous wreck, but that's okay. But you know,
made it through.
So, but you know what? So Jeff said, he just got past it. And I said, what does it? I go, great. I had my surgery last month. What does it consist of? I gave him all the information. And he goes, well, I don't know. Let's call the medical center. And he did. And he told the nurse. And she goes, well, the doctor's busy. I'll have him call you. As soon as he hung up the phone, within 10 seconds, that phone rang. And that doctor, you know, and Jeff put it on speakerphone so I could hear it. And the doctor said, Jeff, what's up? And Jeff said, well, you know, we had a girl that's was honest, said she's transsexual, and said, you know, he goes, Jeff, do you want to hire this person? Jeff goes, well, you know, she's attractive. He said, He said,
I mean, you've always been a looker.
Oh, I love you.
And you have a great charismatic personality as sort of, you know, I say LGBT people are the middle child of society.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so you're always outgoing. And yeah. Of course, they had to have you.
Absolutely. And I'm grateful for Jeff. And, you know, but as he was telling the doctor that I was transsexual, because the word transgender wasn't around back mm-hmm. then, the doctors cut him off and said, Jeff, do you want to hire this person? And he said, well, she's attractive and a good person. He goes, Jeff, we don't hire those people here. We steer clear of them. You know, we don't want them here. Jeff was like, all righty then. And, you know, hung up and said, I'm sorry you had to hear that, but I'm going to put you through. And I have to honestly tell you that I absolutely am so proud of American Airlines, because 5 years later, they were the first airline that started an ERGB pride group in a mm-hmm. large airline. And really, they just celebrated this year their 25th anniversary. And, you know, I have to be honest with you, as Candy, I've always been out. I'm very loud. But because of that incident, you know, with that doctor, I went into what's called stealth mode and at work, and I just stayed as Paula. And, you know, I made mistakes along the way of, and this, here's a very sad part of our community, because it's happened to a couple of my girlfriends also. Another girlfriend of mine who worked at Delta, you know, she kept within the community. She kept around with the gay boys and everything. And, but the sad part is the gay boys are the first ones that tell on you. Always, you know, especially if they know. And, you know,
they want to spill somebody's tea.
They want to spill the tea, kind of like right that you just saw in Pose, you know, the model. And actually, that's a true story, like we were talking about. That's a true story. And, you know, I mean, when I went to work at U.S. Airways, when I came back from Australia, you know, I told a friend of mine, and he started telling a couple people, you know, I mean, he was supposed to be one of my good friends. But, you know, I don't understand that. And, but, you know, it wasn't till until I won Miss Trans USA that I fully came out. I had about, on my Paula's Facebook page, I had about 800 people of family and friends and coworkers. The family knew. But, you know, I made a post, and I posted the picture of me winning Miss Trans USA, thinking they could read my sitch, but obviously they couldn't. I said, yes, so last night this happened, and all these people were going, oh, congrats, congrats, what is it? What did you win? What's, you know, da, 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 da. I'm like, shit, they can't read it.
Miss Trans USA.
So the next day I posted the picture again, and I said, so since Friday was National Coming Out Day, and Saturday night I won Miss Trans USA, I said, I hope that you'll still love me for the human being that I am, with a heart and a soul. And it went viral, and people were like, didn't know, didn't care. You're beautiful inside, outside. We'd love you. My one friend said, like, we didn't know. I'm like, fuck you. You know, but everybody else was like, don't care. We love you. We're so proud of you.
And these are mostly like coworkers.
And I'm not going to lie to you. That was the scariest thing for me. Number one, because growing up as a kid, being effeminate, I got beat up constantly for no other reason other than I was effeminate. Not because I was rude to anybody, not because I served anybody attitude, just because I was different. And I mean, literally beat up all the time. And you know, so finally in my life, I have friends, and to come out like that, and you know, it was a little scary. And then American Airlines got wind of it and came and approached me, and they did an interview with me on our American Airlines website just for our employees. And I came out to over 130,000 employees. And they recently just had me go down to the National NGLCC conference.
National Gay and Lesbian.
It's actually the National LGBT community. Okay. It's for businesses and Chamber of Commerce.
Sure.
Okay. You know, where, and I'm going to be honest with you. It's the first thing that I've been to like this, and to have seen so many LGBT businesses and so many people supporting LGBT businesses together, and companies. American was a huge sponsor of it. Dell was a huge sponsor of it. You know, all
we're the best workers.
Right. And it was amazing. Well,
I'm curious to know, as a superstar flight attendant, which you are, you know, and what about your experience as a trans woman, as a queer person, as a nonconformist, as a performer, do you think influences the way you relate to the passengers?
You know what? I think the way that I relate to the passengers is just that the fact that I've been in the customer service business for years, mm-hmm. you know, and especially since being a flight attendant, but I look at it being a performer also because, you know, you're just not performing on stage. When you're off stage, you're talking to people and you have to be, you know, relatable. You have to talk to people and be able to not just make them happy on stage, but also, you know, off stage. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm on a plane, I make sure that you as a passenger, you know, who is sitting in the middle seat doesn't feel like you're just a nobody stuck in the middle seat. You know, I talk to you because I truly believe that every person on that plane has a story of where they've been, where they're at, and where they're going, and they're not just a seat number. Mm-hmm. So I make them laugh, I talk to them, and people usually always, and I buddy bid with, I call him my husband, Marky, and Marky and I on the beverage cart or food cart together is hilarious. Because we banter back and forth, and so do some of my other flight attendant friends when I'm flying with them. And so you as a passenger, you guys love Southwest, mm-hmm. you know, because they're very frivolous, they're very fun. Well, that's what you get with me. Mm. You know, I just make sure that you feel very special and had a good service.
The character Electra Abundance in Pose, she is usually in a customer service position job. She worked as a hostess at a restaurant, a very famous restaurant in New York City.
Indochine.
I'm sorry, if you do not have a reservation, we will not be able to sit you. Do you say things like, you know, I'm sorry, ma'am, if you do not have a boarding pass, you will not be on this flight.
Well, I don't have to say that because the gate agents mm-hmm. will say it, but yeah. When you come on and you want to sit down in first class and it's not a first class ticket, you know, oh, honey, keep going straight back on to coach. I'll help you find your seat. Come on.
Well, how do you...
Does that happen a lot?
Not a lot, but occasionally. So,
how do you navigate and deal with angry customers or when things go wrong? And you know, and I'm asking you about this because I think LGBTQ people have a little something extra that helps us deal with those situations.
We do, but we sometimes I feel that, you know, we can be a little sharp-witted. So you have to take that down a few notches, especially when you're working with the public. But you have to give empathy, but you know, you also have to be careful because there are people in today's society that realize the more you complain or the more that you do something, the more you get, you know, but you have to actually listen to them mm-hmm. and you have to make sure that, you know, rather than saying no right away, let's find another solution and let's find a way to, you know, because I often say that if you fly on a European carrier, or on Qantas or an Asian carrier, those flight attendants know isn't in their vocabulary. But sometimes you fly on a U.S. carrier, you know, and you walk on and you go to ask the flight attendant something, and they go, no, immediately.
And doesn't it feel good?
No, it doesn't feel good.
When you're in customer service, you can use any other word pretty much except no.
Absolutely.
You know, I'll try my best. We'll see
Absolutely.
What we can do.
Absolutely.
I hear you and we're working on it. But just to tell Absolutely. Somebody flat out no is just, it's a shock to the system.
It is.
Here's one thing that I've learned that I'd like to share with the listeners is sometimes doing nothing is the best solution.
Right.
And offering that to somebody who is like, I want a solution to my problem now, you know,
right.
And it's this idea. And I think it's about binary thinking, right? So when we think about gender or sexuality as a spectrum, we look at all the obstacles that we face as a spectrum.
Absolutely.
And we're able to see the nuance. We're able to see the shades, the flavors, the scents in solutions.
You know, I have to say this for American Airlines. They just did a bias training mm-hmm. for us, you know, which I thought was absolutely amazing that a company mm-hmm. would do this. You know, it was about race. It was about acceptance of everything and how to be better, to you know, handle these things and not treat people differently. You know, treat them all with respect. And I applaud American Airlines mm-hmm. for that training. You know, because so much with, you know, cameras out there today and cell phones, you see things all the time, some things that are going on the airplane, but you're not getting all the picture. You know, and people are quickly, you know, oh, hashtag, you know, don't fly this person or this airline, or hashtag, you know, don't fly this airline, you know, but you know, you're not, we're so quick to jump on that 30-second video when actually there's more to that story than what really went on.
And you're sometimes not getting, you can watch a video and you think you understand what's happening. And
absolutely.
You really, you just don't. You know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, but, you know, what if 999 of those words are a lie?
Absolutely. I mean, nobody got the real story of what happened to that Dr. Dow and what Dr. Dow did before, you know, those cameras started rolling, or the girl that was on American Airlines with her stroller and the first class passenger who should have just stayed seated and minded his own business. You could see him in the video going, they'd never talk to me that way. They'd never talk to me that way. Yet they weren't even talking to him. And he jumps up and has a go and sit down. It was none of your business.
I want to know what happened with the woman who was forced to put her dog in the overhead compartment and then it died. Like, how the heck does that happen?
Yeah. I'd like to know more about that story because that's just.
But the story that rings the most is the guy who quit by grabbing some beer.
And he just made it into the news again. Did you hear that? He's gone missing.
What? He's compulsive.
Yeah, what? He's gone missing, or did he turn up dead or something, or something?
Oh, jeez.
They just Google it because there was just
been in a situation where
and I took this beer.
Happened. I can talk about this anonymously a little bit, but it's like there's been situations where things went really, really poorly, and like they just said, Fausto, sit down and take a break.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, I'm fine. But they were like, and then you sit down and you reflect on it and you realize that sometimes dealing with these really difficult situations and people who have gone off the rails can affect you in a very deep way. And I think about, and people like ask me, why
but
do you keep your...
It also makes you think, well, why is this happening?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think about like this line that Blanca said in Pose, which, you know, is of course our favorite TV show right now.
I love that show.
I've had more beatings than you've had breakfasts. And we're just, you know, in some ways it's like it's a gift to dealing with adversity. It's like we're able to roll with punches that other people. And I think, you know, marginalized people share that common language.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I have the hardest time understanding how, you know, we're such a marginalized group, yet some people in our own marginalized group are fans of this administration. You know,
I think Republicans. Let's really spell it out here. Their core base is people with mental health issues,
right.
And I think racism is in some ways a mental health issue, as Toni Morrison said.
It's definitely a developmental issue.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's a level of immaturity. It's a level of ignorance. It's a level of
I don't remember the comfort. Republicans. I don't remember the Republicans being this bad years ago.
This is a consequence that was started from Nixon all the way to Reagan, all the way to George W. Bush. And here we are at the logical conclusion.
Yeah, it's
of that.
Decades of not funding education.
Right.
It's decades of, you know, making the rich rich and the poor poor. So what we're selling.
Hence the guy from PayPal going on and supporting.
Peter Thiel.
What is wrong with him?
The wealth, it's, you know, for some people, it's important. Like their wealth comes first, you know, their white identity comes first, and everything else falls to the wayside.
Stop erasing us!
Right.
People not, you know, and part of it is like, you know, when we talk about LGBT equality, there's always somebody who's like, you're going to erase what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman.
Right.
And I'm like, well.
Oh, I was just reading it.
Chanel
just made a trans girl, you know, a face of their new beauty campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And all these remarks underneath it was, oh, great. Now you're going to use a man for a woman's face and da 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 da. Now the women don't get a job. And, you know, now you got the TERFs out there, you know, that are so anti-trans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's a perfect story about them.
For some people, the trans exclusionary radical feminists.
Right, right.
Who are women, mostly very butch looking women,
right.
Who are mad because these trans women look more feminine than they do.
Well, they've also spent a lifetime with their own gender being questioned. And
yes.
Some TERFs are, you know, I think stemming from personal trauma.
Yeah.
And then some TERFs are insincere hucksters who are getting paid by conservative Republicans to fuck with
shit. They're well funded.
So let's talk about that. Yeah. You know, and was it last year that they went and attacked? You know, out in Washington D.C., mm-hmm. they came all the way over from England, and you know, and then the next thing you know, the right wing is now hired them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, especially what it's that family group. What's the name of that?
Focus on the family.
Focus on the family.
Not
that
Feast of Fun.
The other FOF.
Right. Yeah. They've hired them. Yeah. And listen, those people don't even like you. They're just using you to you know, don't get me started.
They want the money.
They're like, look, somebody from your own community is, you know, saying that, you know, you're not real and you don't exist, you know, mm-hmm. but these women, my point being is I'm going to tell you something. I met this guy that was the head of a large LGBT group mm-hmm. in London, and we were talking, and I said, you know, what's going on with your trans community over there? And he's like, well, and I said, in the TERFs, I mean, you know, that was horrible that they stopped the LGBT, the Pride Parade last year. And I heard this year, you know, there's been a big campaign, you know, no TERFs welcome. And he's like, the what? And you could see he got more uncomfortable with me talking about it. And he finally said to me, he said, well, I have to be honest with you. He said, you know, I kind of live my little gay bubble and, you know, gay guy thing. And I'm going, wait, you're the president of the LGBT pride group, you know, in your area. How could you not know about every division of, you know, of the LGBTQI, you mm-hmm. know, acronyms? And he was like, you know, and I'm like, so then... You know, as I was telling you earlier, then I started going to these prides as Miss Trans USA, and I'd be talking to people, and gay guys would say, well, you know, I don't get the whole lesbian thing. I don't get the whole trans thing. Lesbians say, you know, I don't get the trans thing. I don't get the non-binary, or I don't get the gay thing, you know.
They're not trying too hard.
Right.
That's a very superficial way of thinking.
A lot of them said, you know, they don't get the bisexual thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just made me stand there and think, here we are in a time, you know, where our administration is really trying to, you know, eradicate us or just, you know, erase us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, okay, the days of not getting each other, it's time to get each other. And
do you feel like people got each other more in the past? Or is it just, have we, cause I know like with our structures of a lot of gay bars is like, things can be very segregated, you know,
right.
Like certain type of gay people go to this bar, they'll have a trans bar, you know, maybe there's not even lesbian bars anymore. There just might be like a lesbian night at some place. Are we too segregated from each other?
I think so. You know, I really honestly and truly think so. And one thing that I did as my platform as Miss Trans USA, when I got to speak at different prides, is I stood up and told people, and a lot of them were outside prides. So a lot of people were sitting mm-hmm. on the lawns and that. And I said, you know, I said, you know, take a look around. I said, we are some of the most loving people under the same rainbow flag, you know, some of the most loving, caring people. And with what's going on in society and especially towards us, you know, you need to take a look around and get to know that person. And I asked everybody, I said, please do me a favor and stand up, you know, and I gotta be honest with you. You saw it. They would get up off the lawns. And I said, now turn around and look at somebody you don't know, not somebody you're with, but somebody you don't know, and give that person a hug. To see these prides everywhere and those people doing it, I said, now get to know this person, learn about them, become friends, because, you know, there's strength in unity. If we don't have that strength in unity, guess what? You know what? They're going to be able to use it against us. And they, you know, nobody outside our community is ever going to, you know, respect us. Mm. You know, we have to support each other.
Let's add something to that. Give a person a hug you've not been cruising for the last hour.
Well, I kind of meant, you know, the opposite sex. And you did see a lot of lesbians turning around and hugging gay guys. Gay guys hugging, you know, trans. Women hugging trans. You know, trans hugging everybody. And it was, I can't tell you how amazing it was. It was...
I don't know if necessarily, like, I know it, right now it feels like things are more divided than they've ever been, but in some ways, there's also a richer diversity of opinions.
Absolutely.
And I like that diversity because not everyone's going to solve problems in the same way.
No, They're not. And I'm not looking for everybody to solve a problem, but one problem we do need to solve together is not letting this administration erase any of us, you know, and we as a community have to stick up and stick up for each other.
Well, what's going to involve is all of us getting out of our houses, our homes,
voting,
and not just voting, knocking on doors and getting people to vote.
Right. Going to that restaurant that's selling that chicken sandwich and getting people to register to vote.
Yes.
Well, the thing about it is like people are like, what's the secret to Popeye's chicken sandwich? And someone said, well, you just have to use the right marinade that removes the racism and homophobia and transphobia from the chicken.
Yes.
And then it's going to taste delicious. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
You see people killing each other for the chicken sandwich? And I'm like, that's a viral marketing gone up.
Look, that gone wrong.
I'm like, now I'm thinking about it. I was like, I want us. You know?
I know. What are you doing after this podcast?
Well, obviously we're going to Popeye's chicken.
Because it isn't the other one, is it?
Right. No.
You know, I've never eaten at the other one. Ever.
I used to as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, it was okay, but it was not like, oh, my God. You know, when you hear LGBT people bragging how about they like to eat at Chick-fil-A, there's mental health issues there.
Right.
You know, and
well,
it's like,
that's no different than some bragging about how great Trump has been. And,
right?
You know, and
it's tough. And part of it is like, if it's okay for you just to disconnect from them, any way you deal with that situation is okay. Because in some ways, you know, there's always hate and there's always love, and love is stronger than hate, because if it was the opposite, we wouldn't be here.
Right.
And we can overcome anything. We've had more beatings than we've had breakfasts.
Absolutely.
We are very strong people.
I know that feeling.
Do not underestimate us.
Absolutely. But you know what I worry about with all of this is the youth of today.
Mm.
You know, the suicides are up. And
are they?
Yeah, the suicides are up.
So it didn't get better?
No. You know, I mean, it does. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more people need to stand up and speak up so that our youth realize that. Let me tell you another story. This past summer at all the prides that I was performing since or talking at, I did a share show at a couple of them. I headlined out at San Francisco Pride, and also in Iowa City was another one. But after the Iowa City one of the doctors who's in the LGBT youth, they've got a group for just the LGBT, I can't even talk to the LGBTQI plus, you know, community. They have a medical center just for those people, and especially trans kids.
Mm.
And Dr. Katie came and sat with me, and we had a 20 to 40 minute question and answer and sat and talked. And she really let me talk about me. She asked me questions. I asked questions about her. There were so many little trans youth kids sitting there and LGBT kids sitting there. And they... Oh.
Your phone's reacting to you.
Was that me?
Yeah.
I'm like, who are you talking
to?
Oh, it's my phone. I thought it was yours.
No.
I'm like, what's your computer doing?
It's your virtual assistant reacting to your voice.
Well, we're going to say goodbye. So she wanted me to start my workout.
So you were talking to a bunch of trans kids.
So there were a bunch of, and LGBT kids out there. And nothing made me feel that anything I've ever done was more important than that day with those kids out there, and getting to talk to them afterwards and them asking questions and kids sitting out there crying. And Carmela, who posted, we made a connection afterwards. She came up and she was sitting out there crying. And I said, oh, little trans girl. And I said, oh, are your parents supportive? And she was with a woman. And I said, is that your mom? And she said, no. She goes, that's my big sister. She goes, I'm in the big sister, big brother program. And I said, are your parents supportive? And she goes, well, no, not really. And you know, the big sister was crying also. And you know, and then we connected on Facebook, and she said, you know, after meeting Candy and hearing her words, you know, I felt safe. And, you know, these kids need to be told they are safe. And, you know, I tell people, I work with, a youth group now in the Quad City, a new community center that was opened up called Clock Inc. And I've just become part of the board. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I was very honored that they asked me. But nothing makes me feel better than to come with these kids. These kids are some of the best kids. And you can see that even though they're out in junior high and high school, they're still proud, but they're still scared. Like one the other day was saying that, you know, well, school's starting back up and the bullies are going to come. And, you know, I'm not a counselor, but all I can tell those kids is, you know what? I was there. I get it. But you have got to pick yourself up and you have to stay strong and know that we love you and that you are loved and that, you know, it does turn out okay. Because look, if I can make it, you can make it. If you guys can make it, they can make it.
And these kids already know who they are.
They do.
You know, and I think that that's probably the, when you know who you are, you can really just handle a lot.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I've made it or not. I'm still, every day I'm like, you know,
You've made it to me. You've made it to me.
And part of it is like, I think, you know, there was a Seven of Nine in Star Trek said this one. May all your dreams come true except one, so you always have something to strive for.
Absolutely.
And part of it is, in talking to a lot of young people, there's a lot of isolation. And everyone's like blaming social media about it. I'm like, actually, social media is probably like saving a lot of people's lives.
Right.
It's that there's no income. What is it? The average household income and the hourly wage in the last 30 years is frozen.
Right.
So people, households and parents have to work several jobs. There's nobody home.
Oh,
and then defunding of schools. There's no after school programs.
Thank you.
The teachers are not being paid what they're worth. And so the teachers are demoralized. And then a lot of youth in this country, regardless of even income, but especially people who are poor and marginalized, have nobody to talk to,
right,
face to face. And so social media is probably saving a lot of people's lives. But of course, you know, we want to blame Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, all this stuff, because of vanity and people fighting with each other.
Well, but then all the weirdos find each other too. All these lone wolves that are shooting people up. They get all sorts of inspiration from the internet.
And that's definitely happening. But I would argue in terms of the needs of youth right now.
But you know what?
It's give the parents a job so they don't have to, that it gives them a livable wage so they don't have to work several jobs and give the schools the proper funding.
Well, don't you see, I mean, were your parents both workers growing up or was one a stay at home?
My mom was stay at home for part of the time.
Right. Yeah, mine too.
Yeah. I had parents that stayed home all the time, you know, and it's like I was homeschooled too.
Right. You know, I see a difference today, the way that I was raised or I was taught with a stay-at-home parent to, like you said, now society, both parents have to work to afford everything. The kids are left alone. They're left alone with TVs or babysitters or a computer now or an iPad. And you don't see an interaction between youth and adults or between anybody. You know, everybody's on their phone. They get on the plane. They're just on, they've got their headsets on. You're greeting them at the plane and they don't even look at you, and I'll tap them and I'll go, hi, welcome aboard. There is a world outside that headset. So glad you could join us. Well,
is that why the flight attendants want you to take your headset off? Just because if something goes wrong.
Because number one, you know,
I want
Well, I want your contact. I want your eye contact because I want you to know that I know that I see you, so that, you know, in case don't try anything. If if you are somebody that's going to be a little bit fishy or, you know, something, we know. You know, we get that sense. So
tell Mark to put away his phone and stop playing Words with Friends like Alec Baldwin. And you heard about that, right? That shit went crazy. Alec Baldwin was like, I think he was kicked off the plane.
I think he called somebody an F word.
I remember that. I'm not going to say anything.
So you just won Miss Trans USA.
I did.
2019.
I did. And I give it up in September 21st up in Milwaukee.
Just in days away.
You guys should come up. It's an amazing. Where
is it? Is this one of those all-day trans pageants?
No, it's not.
Like Continental is like 5 days.
No, it's not. So and I'll tell you why I got involved. So obviously I've been involved in pageants before.
Haven't had a title since 2009.
I hadn't.
So it's a decade.
It's a decade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at 55, I pretty much felt I was done with pageants. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the pageants that I won was one of the first pageants here in the States that opened up to post-op trans girls. And then they started a gen session or a side of it. And I, you know, men's side. And I said, you should open up to trans men. And they were like, no. But to me, I'm like, you know, why not? You know, why not?
Is there an interest? Are the trans men interested?
Of course there are trans men that would want to be interested in that. You know, they have, you know, Mr. Gay US of A for MI. But, you know, not every trans man wants to be known as a male impersonator, you know. Mm-hmm. So why not let them enter? I think they should let them enter, you know, any male contest. And, you know, look at Paulo Bautista, you know.
Oh, baby.
We had to throw Paulo's name out there.
My sweetheart.
Right. You know, winning the leather contest out, you know, was it the Eagle contest, Mr. Eagle or something?
I don't know.
I don't know anybody
as beautiful and as charming and as physically intimidating.
He's one of the most amazing
arousing
people.
Just to, you know, he's just a formidable. He started a web series where he's like giving fitness advice.
That's great.
And
that's
like, I'll take some of that.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I'll take any of it.
Is it working for you?
We'll see.
It's doing all right.
Let me know.
Flex, you look amazing.
Thank you.
Fausto, you look amazing.
Go on. Tell me how much.
You haven't aged since I've seen you in 10 years.
Bautista is, you know, you're close friends with him.
We're very good friends. Yeah. And, you know, Paulo has told me, he won, and then he had some backlash for winning that contest.
But which contest are you talking about, though?
The one that he won out a few years ago.
Mr. Leather?
It was Mr. Leather or Eagle or something, you know, for San Diego. But how about recently? The International Male Leather, you know, as a trans man. Mm-hmm. Good for them. How fantastic, you know.
It's not the first trans man to win either.
Yeah, right. But
and there were some people that weren't happy with that either.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, because there's always going to be some people that are backwards.
Right. But why? Because he looked amazing.
Everybody came forward and stepped up and said, you know what, you're wrong about this. And the one person who was very vocal was removed from being president of his chapter because we were like, listen, we don't need your backward views.
Right. Absolutely.
Dominique Jackson read them to filth and it didn't happen, but. Go get your clam chowder before your clam chowder gets you.
Oh, they couldn't have picked a better woman to be read, could they?
Oh, yeah.
She was perfect for that little Buffy.
Right.
So you decided to do the pageant.
I decided to do it because I saw somebody make a post about this pageant for Mr. and Miss Trans USA. Mm-hmm. And I contacted them and I'm like, what is this? And they were like, oh, it's funny you're calling because we were going to see if maybe you would want to judge or something. And I said, well, what is it? And they told me it's not a performance pageant. Mm-hmm. I don't want to call it a drag pageant. It's not a performance pageant.
Okay.
It's a contest for trans men and women who want to, you know, vie for a title and be able to use that title as a platform. And let me tell you, it has done that. And so when I heard that there was something for the men, not only for the girls, but for me, for something inclusive for the trans men out there, I'm like, I don't want to be a judge. I want to enter. Not thinking I wasn't entering to win. I honestly thought, you know.
Sure, you weren't.
No, you can talk to all my friends. And actually, Joshuan, who did my creative costume, made this beautiful post. He said, yesterday, you know, you were standing in, you know, we'll say his living room, you know, while I'm doing your creative costume saying, I don't expect to win at 55, but I want to give a voice and a name to this contest to help it. And he goes, and today here you are standing with that crown on your head. And he said, you know, it just made me cry. But I entered, you know, for trans girls and trans men that aren't always in the performance world, you know, and Luis and Gerardo Perez and Luis Perez, you know, are two of the sweetest, most caring promoters I seriously have ever met. And I couldn't be prouder to be their first crowned, winner. And they've treated me like gold. Their heart of gold for the trans community is amazing.
So is Miss Trans USA more like just the Miss USA pageant?
Yes.
It's just a beauty pageant.
Well, here it's not about beauty. It is a beauty pageant.
About charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent?
Yes. So it's,
or more than that.
It's what it is so their motto, they told me, was you don't have to be the most beautiful. It's not about age. It's not about size. It's about you as a person and your story and having a platform, you know, within the trans community. And
what words are they using for what they're seeking?
Same, what I just told you.
So they're very descriptive about it. They're not saying we want the most charismatic or.
Well, they want somebody that is charismatic. Yeah. You know, you don't have to be the most beautiful. You don't have to be the thinnest. Thank God I wouldn't have won. You know, I mean, I truly didn't think I would win, but I did. I mean, my top five, the girls were all beautiful and younger. But what this contest has done for me is done more than any other contest with the interviews I've done, the TV interviews, the newspaper, the Pride's reaching out to me. I spoke at the University of Iowa Hospital, you know, in front of a bunch of doctors and nurses, and it's been amazing. And so this, just that title has given me a platform and a voice. I'm so proud of Alexandra Billings, who I started drag out with at La Cage when she was Shantae. Mm. We started out together, and look at, she's on, you know, Transparent now. She's now on a new TV show coming out, and also the girls of Pose, you know, Janet Mock, who wrote a book and is directing and writing the show. You know, those girls are all out there. The rest of us don't have those voices. We're not on those shows. This actually gave me a voice. It actually let me use my voice and speak. So I got to speak and people got to hear me. You've got me here, you know, again. And it's been the most fulfilling thing that I've ever done in my 56 years.
Well, congratulations. Glad you won.
Thank you.
And you were the first winner of this.
So they had emeritus, but I was the first one crowned. Okay. Yeah. They had a girl that you know, just helps, you know, get the pageant up and out there. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you're known as being a Cher impersonator.
Yes.
And every time I see a picture of Cher on the internet, I always have to check, is that really Cher or is that Candy Stratton or maybe Chad Michaels?
Right. I have to laugh whenever, you know, somebody sends a picture or my friends go, yeah, I just posted this picture of Cher and it tagged you in it, you know? Or I'll put something up and immediately it tags me, and you know,
what does Cher think about you?
Well, you know, so I met her in Australia, not like sat down and had tea or crumpets or anything, and I went to a concert there, and you know, I'm at the end of the stage and she calls me forward, and she, you know, she did the Cher bow to me and I did it back to her, and she goes, come on girlfriend, get your hand up. And she gave me a high five and said, you rock. And that was it. But I was really upset. You know, she's never invited me back for tea and crumpets.
Aww,
I often say I'm the only Cher impersonator out there who has not had a picture with her yet. You know?
Oh, you haven't had one yet?
No.
Oh, well, Cher. Maybe
so what is, when you see like a baby queen start doing Cher and stuff like that, what's the thing that, that they get wrong? Like what's a bad Cher impersonator do?
So let me tell you what a good Cher impersonator is, because true Cher fans, and they're thick, not size-wise, but you know, there's a lot, but when they're a Cher fan, they are a Cher fan. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can't, I get read a lot for being thick. For me being, you know, a heavy, because, you know,
because Cher's petite.
Well, no, we're the same height. I'm about a half, maybe half an inch taller than her. She's 5'7". I'm in between 5'7" and 5'8".
Okay.
But she's very tiny, you know, and you know,
she's had ribs removed.
She didn't have ribs removed.
About it. Yeah.
There's, you know, and she just she discredited it, you know, she's a woman. She's tiny, and back then she didn't eat. Look at her now. She's older. She's 73 right now.
We can do a 5-minute plank.
Right. Well, she did say she did that once. She said she could probably do about 2 minutes. She said one time.
I'm in about a minute and it's rough.
I'm in about 5 seconds and then I'm out. You know, I'm like, well, that's so much.
You know the secret to making your plank last longer? Quick aside here. Play your favorite music. And move your hips.
How about somebody holding your legs and arms up? But, you know, to be a good Cher impersonator, it's not just wearing a costume that you think looks like she would have wore. You have to replicate what she's wearing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I do. That's what I always say. You can't just think, oh, well, my makeup kind of looks like her. Mm-hmm. Still to this day, after 30 some years of being a Cher, you know, impersonator, I still put a picture, and especially because her look is always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I won't say anything. And
she just gestured at pulling her skin back.
We know what you were doing in Mexico.
You know, but, oh, yeah, well, you know, look, I'm the first one to say I went live about it.
I know, it was amazing.
You know, I went live about it. But, you know, I still put a picture next to my mirror when I'm doing my makeup. My eyes aren't shaped like hers. Mm. And I look at her eyes and I think, okay, how do I reshape my eye to look more like hers? You know, I draw my face different. I contour here and there. And you've got to do that. And then you can't just go out and be, and I love Chad and I and my friend Steven and, you know, my
Steven's the Cher impersonator in Chicago?
No, in Vegas.
In Vegas. Vegas. Okay.
You know, Steven
Wayne. There's one here too.
Chicago Cher.
Chicago Cher.
I've never met her. And that
she's really nice. Yeah.
I bet.
Yeah. All the Cher impersonators are like the nicest people.
Absolutely. Like, I've never met her.
I've never met a rude Cher impersonator.
No. And you know what? I'm so grateful to have Chad as a sister and Steven and some other Cher impersonators out there that, you know, it is a sisterhood. And the best thing about Chad Michaels is, you know, he's a lot like me in the fact that, you know what? Let's do a show together. He doesn't care that we all do the same character.
It makes it more fun. Cher and Cher alike.
Absolutely. You know, but you get some people out there like, oh, you do my character, so I don't want to be anywhere near you. Mm. You know, or they get so territorial. I will tell anybody how to do Cher that asks me. Mm-hmm. I give them advice. I tell them what to do. I have studied Cher. And that's what I love about Steven and also Chad. You know, you can tell that we've watched, you know, because even though, you know, everybody likes to go, you know, Cher doesn't really do that on stage. She's licking her lips because they get dry. And, you know, it's more like that than, you know, the big dramatic thing, you know.
Well, you're like me. You grew up watching. You saw Cher show. Absolutely. Cher show. You know, she kind of disappeared for a little while. And then she was like, oh, my God, now she is in Silkwood.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I want her to do another movie. I mean, she was absolutely phenomenal in Burlesque and Mamma Mia 2. And, you know, she did pull up a script and was hugging it a while ago, but I haven't heard anything about it. So I don't know if she's, you know, if it's coming true. I know she's recording right now another ABBA.
I know. Can you imagine? So that must have been a big moneymaker for her.
It must have been.
Because she's like, I'm doing more of them.
Right. And I loved it. And let me tell you, it's when I perform, you know, you share ABBA, the crowd, as soon as you start doing Dancing Queen, they're all up dancing.
Do you get what's the biggest reaction you get from which song that you do that people are just like, that's the one that really touches people the most?
So I get when I come out in the 60s medley or Turn Back Time. And, you know, Alex, who we were talking about earlier, misunderstood. No, Alex.
Misunderstood.
You know, he does a lot of my bookings for corporate things and that I don't like post a lot about. But, you know, I love working with Alex. That's one crazy man. I love him. But, you know, so when I'm with those, that's what they always want to see. They want to see that 60s look, the Take Me Home and Turn Back Time. And it's a classic, no matter what. And then if I pull out the ABBA thing, the crowd goes up because they love ABBA music. Mm. You know, not everybody's quite familiar. Some, you know, a lot of the straight crowd. But, you know, if you're going to do Cher, you better watch her. You better learn how she walks. You better learn how she holds herself.
And I'll give you one other clue. If you want to learn how to do Cher, also watch Elvis, because that's who she watched.
Right. And the other one is, I don't know if you ever remember the Heart of Stone tour. She had a Cher impersonator. And to all of us, Cher impersonator, he is the god of Cher impersonators. Mm. His name was Elgin. His name is John Kenna. And nobody ever has looked like Cher like he did. Mm. I mean, it was uncanny. They went on David Letterman together. And actually, he was on a Geraldo show. And she saw him. And she got in touch with him, or somebody got in touch with him. And he went on that tour with her. It was, I knew Elgin when he was Kelly Allman, and we were in Miss Gay America in 1983 together. Mm. And even back then, just starting out, it was uncanny to stand next to him. And I didn't dare tell him that I used to do Cher because I looked nothing like her back then. But I'm standing there going, I'm right next to Cher. Mm. But one of the most amazing Cher impersonators to this day. I seriously can say.
So he's still doing it?
No, he retired after the Heart of Stone tour. But I'm very honored that I found him and he accepted my friendship. And he's so complimentary. And I still to this day am, you know, and Chad also, we're both like, you know, yes, you know, bow down to the true Cher impersonator.
I heard rumors that there was going to be like a Cher expo. Like for all the impersonators to get together.
I haven't heard that one. They used to have an expo. It was called the Cher Convention. But that was years ago, and that was to you know benefit the Children's Craniofacial Association. They used to have it every year out in Vegas. Mm. They used to have a bunch of Cher impersonators, female Cher lookalikes and singers, and female impersonators Cher. People out there. And so when the cruise that Chad and I just did last year, the Cher crew, she calls her fans the Cher crew. We had a Cher crew cruise that we were hired for. And we're doing another one coming up this April. So if you guys want to come with me on a cruise, come on. It was the best time. But, you know, last year the cruise benefited for the Children's Cranial Facial.
Because of the movie Mask?
Yes, because she very got involved with it after that. And the family that was there, the Guzzos, Scott Guzzo was our ambassador. Mm. And his family, the mom told us, you know, Paula Guzzo, she said to me, she said, yeah, you know, the Children's Craniofacial, you know, wasn't doing very well. And she said she did that movie and then she got very involved with it. And because of Cher, you know, they really started taking off and were able to survive and help these kids because it costs a lot of money for those.
Oh, yeah.
For those kids.
So Cher's like Elizabeth Taylor for that condition.
For that one, yes. And now this year, the cruise is the Wounded Warrior, which is another benefit or thing that she's very involved with the helmets and everything. Mm. And so the ambassador this year is going to be somebody from the Wounded Warrior on the cruise. So all proceeds that we make on the cruise, you know, show wise and everything. So all our tips go into buckets and you know, all that goes to that organization. So
that's great.
Candy, you are so sweet. That's why they call you Candy Stratton.
They like to, do you know the terrible nickname they have for me?
No.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't tell you. I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Well, why'd you bring it up?
Just to tease you.
Who is that?
Look, just to tease you.
Who's there? Your fans or the people, other showgirls?
Oh,
girls,
you know, the showgirls. You know, they always got to come up with some nickname.
They call you Butterscotch.
No, you know, do you know what my first drag name was, don't
you?
No. It was Candy Slice.
Oh, that's cute.
So do you know where it was from?
No.
Gilda Radner. She used to have a one-woman show when she was on Saturday. She was the original Saturday Night Live cast, and she had a Broadway one. She had this character that was punk rock, and I thought it was so punk rock back then. Can you imagine? And her name was Candy Slice, and that was my first. And she's like, "Oh, I'm Candy Slice," and you know,
let's talk dirty to the animals. That's special that was on HBO. It really influenced a lot of performers.
Right.
I think that candy slices were those little citrus candies, weren't they?
The lemon.
They were like
lemons
that came in their own little thing. Yeah. They looked like a slice of citrus.
Yeah.
Or maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll never forget going from Miss Gay America. One of the promoters said, you know, you should think about changing your name. I can't ever imagine crowning anybody at Miss Gay America named Candy Slice. And then I go, oh my God. And then I went and watched that movie Star 80. And I thought, oh my God, I'm Dorothy Stratton reincarnated early. I hope nobody murders me.
Wow.
So that's where Stratton came from.
I wondered. I actually thought about that today. I thought about the movie Star 80. I'm like, I wonder if Stratton comes from
it
Star
80. It did. Look at you. You're so smart. That's what I love about you.
The
well,
name,
we're from the same epic.
Yeah.
Ah.
The name Paula is also a name you chose for yourself.
It
as
is.
Well.
So before
what inspired that name?
Well, when I went to go change my name, because I had to legally change, I decided to leave Candy on stage and not take her off stage. And I sat down. Okay, this is going to be a really stupid story. Are you ready? So I was dating this straight guy at the time. We never, and this is the honest truth, we never had sex because he was straight, but he was enamored with me as a girl. You know, we were dating, and when I was sitting down talking to my parents about, you know, names, he goes, hey, what about Paula? Because his name was Paul. He goes, wouldn't it be cute if someday you and I got married and we were Paul and Paula? I'm like, okay. So I went back to my parents to go, what do you think about Paula? And I guess we had a cousin. Well, we have a cousin named Paula, but they're like, Paula's all right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's how, but I'm a much better Paula than I am looking like Candy. So Paula fits me.
But there was a pop singing duo named Paul and Paula.
Yeah, but it wasn't us.
Yeah, but I don't know that that was
in
his mind.
Did they lip sync like I do?
They're the one, they wrote the song, Hey Paula. Hey, yeah. Hey, Paula.
And I usually tell anybody that starts singing that to me, don't finish it unless you mean it. You know? And then they stop and think about what the next verse is. And they're like, oh, never mind.
So we've had a decade of RuPaul's Drag Race where starting to see an explosion of gender nonconforming contests, mm-hmm. right? We have Dragula. We have.
Isn't that amazing that they put Landon Sider on this season?
And Camp Wanakiki also had a trans. What is that? A drag king.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And a trans contestant as well.
Okay.
This season and you know, we're just starting to see so much diversity and variety. And people are still like, you know, looking at World of Wonder and RuPaul and VH1 and going, what do you think? Because you know a lot of these people. You're an insider. You were involved in being some of the first advertisers and for RuPaul's Drag Race. And, you know, how do you think they're going to they cannot keep that.
Can they
anymore.
Stop that trans wave from hitting the shore?
Well, what will that look like?
They like to say that they had Gia Gunn. You know, after she transitioned, they had Gia Gunn, and you know, they're like, well, look,
that's All Stars doesn't count.
They're like, well, we had a trans person, you know, and that's how they. But didn't they get rid of her right away? You know, just to say that we had a trans person.
For whatever reason, it doesn't feel like it's. Being part of their narrative, it's
it didn't
not
feel like it was genuine.
It's genuine. It feels manipulative and sneaky.
And didn't she read about it also while she was on the show?
A lot of trans women from Carmen Carrera, except with the exception of Peppermint, a lot of them do feel that the show hasn't really fully embrace a gender.
Well, I know that they said
person.
That Peppermint was trans, but was she really? I mean, she didn't get her breast till after the show. And I worked with her before that at a college thing that Alex, that Misunderstood and I put us together in. And I didn't know that she was trans, you know, at the time.
She came on this podcast and we talked about her being trans and she was talking about, we thought we were like, oh, you should just audition anyway. What does it matter? You're like,
she didn't want to audition. And,
well, she was being very coy about it, but what we didn't know that she'd already been in talks with them about getting on the show and doing stuff. So she was very coy about it. And you know what? It's they're okay with the trans thing, but you know, to be honest with you, it's how else to say it, but a titty queen. They don't want a woman.
Well, they don't want you look. They don't want you, but they don't want you sitting there looking during the day like a woman during all the challenges, because where's the transformation at night? That's ruse or their, you know, whoever it is, that's their way of thinking, which is sad, you know.
Because I mean, they've had drag queens that have been on hormones or trans people that have been on hormones who've had silicone injections.
Look, Jiggly was trans before she got on. Jiggly was trans and she stopped. You know, her trans thing, you know, to get on there.
Yeah.
And
many of them haven't. I've talked to many girls who are just like, I want to get breasts, but I want to get on RuPaul's Drag Race first.
I've heard some girls that have breasts have talked about wanting to have their breasts removed just so they can get on. And I think, isn't that sad? Mm-hmm. You know, what's more important to you, fame or your own gender identity, who you really are as a person?
Mm-hmm. Or another thing to ponder is just the relevance of being on that show is not as powerful as it used to be. And so,
Is it more powerful than ever? I mean, now it's on a major network, and
it's now owned by CBS, and I'm sure they're going to do something in Australia. But
CBS, it's merged again with Viacom. CBS now owns RuPaul's Drag Race.
Wow!
So where's that going to go? You know,
right?
And part of it is maybe. It's a step back and look at the success of Pose and look at the internet and look at shows like Dracula.
I'm so grateful for stuff like that.
Where would you like for us to be? Where do you think we're going to be in terms of as in terms of culture, entertainment, gender nonconformity, trans exclusivity?
You know, I just do you remember years ago before RuPaul's Drag Race, you know, it was you saw everything from you know, male, female impersonators to trans girls performers alongside of each other. Mm. And I have seen a lot of the trans, you know, community being, you know, pushed out because, you know, well, you weren't on that show. I got it. And here's the funny thing, Chad and I were talking. So about 4 years ago, I was semi-retiring, and I really meant it, but I haven't had a chance to yet. But Chad and I were at lunch one day in San Diego, and I said to Chad, and I'm so happy that Chad won. Chad's one of my dear mm-hmm. sisters. And I said, you know, Chad, I go, it's not worth it for me, you know, the drag shows or the gay bars anymore. You know, I'm still okay with working with Alex and Misunderstood because, you know, Alex books me for corporate gigs, which are predominantly straight corporations that want to either...
It's a different atmosphere.
Right.
It's a
you know,
experience.
Right. They're not
it's a
looking...
paycheck.
It's a really good paycheck. And they're not looking for the RuPaul, mm-hmm. you know, who's been on TV. They're looking for impersonators or they're looking for that stuff. But... you get the gay bars. And I told Chad, I go, now people they used to call me all the time. And I'm thankful that I went back to the airlines before all this. And, you know, I've got a career, but it's not worth it for me anymore at a lot of the gay bars because they'll call me and they'll go, are you available this weekend? Unfortunately, Chad wasn't. And I go, okay. And I tell them my price, which is, you know, about $500, you know, and they go, oh, well, you work for $150. Yet they were just going to pay somebody else a lot of money. And I'm like, no, you know, mm-hmm. and yet I still pack the house. People are still screaming because I look like Cher, just like Chad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have one of the best nights they've had in a long time, but then they don't ever say, here's a little extra money. Thank you. Plus they know I fly for free, you know, being a fly attendant. And, you know, so it gets to a point where you're like, you know, it's really changed the way people think and the way they book people, you know, and here I'm going to say something about some of the girls on the show. You know, I've watched a lot of girls who I've known beforehand, and Chad and I have talked about this, and I'm very good friends with Morgan McMichael. She's one of my dearest sisters.
Everybody's friends with Morgan McMichael.
Amazing talent.
Yeah, amazing. You know, and
I love her.
And, you know, and Delta Works, you know, some of the sweetest people. But a lot of these girls that you knew beforehand, they get on, and then all of a sudden they forget their other trans or other drag or trans sisters. And the only thing that you see them comment on is each other's websites or each other's, you know, things on Instagram. You don't ever see them going or replying to a lot of, you know, people that were still their friends or were their friends or
I know how that feels.
Yeah. Do you?
A lot of them sat in that chair and you just never hear from them again. But, you know, it's a different relationship.
Right. You know? But still, you know, these were people that we worked alongside with. And then, you know, it becomes a sorority and it becomes a what's the word? An elitist group.
It's them who have keep on having.
Right. And they just forget, you know, I mean, I see a lot of my trans sisters that are still, you know, just performers, don't have other jobs, being ostracized, you know, and
that's the other thing too, is like sometimes they look at somebody like you and they say, how did this person make it without a television show?
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's very threatening
right.
to them.
You right.
know, they're like, how does somebody have a career in LGBT media and they haven't been on RuPaul's Drag Race?
Right.
They don't, you know what, they don't get it. You know what I mean? It's beyond their comprehension.
Because here's the other thing. If you're nothing but a cookie cutter mold of everybody that's been on a show and now we all paint the same way and now we all have the same frickin' look, who's going to book you if you haven't been on that show? And why would they? Because you don't look any different than what they get off that show. Mm. You know, I remember back in the day, let's bring it back to a trans girls.
Sure.
I remember back in the day at Continental, you had myself, Maya, Mimi, Tasha Long, Cezanne, you know, Erica Andrews, Monica Monroe, Silky O'Hara, you know, girls that had their own look. Nobody looked alike. We didn't all come on stage looking exactly like each other. You know, Sherry Payne, we all looked like ourselves. You know, you didn't see us all looking, painting exactly the same way. Now, I look at everybody, I'm like, well, were you one of the ones on RuPaul or not? Because you all look alike. You know, I mean, you all have the same
makeup.
And they
don't like to hear that.
Well, what do you expect? They've all got that nose. That's
the exclamation point nose.
Contour. You
know? It is interesting. Part of it is, you know, it's back to this idea. Are we doing art because we want to express ourselves, because we want to connect to a community, because we want to make the world a more colorful place? Or are we just looking at this as another job?
Or are we looking at, well, she made it looking like that, so now I'm going to look like that. Let's talk about Trixie Mattel. Mm.
If I had a nickel for every Trixie Mattel impersonator.
Oh my God.
Holy God. I went into one bar event thing, and I counted 15 drag queens that looked like, I imagine that Brian Ferkus, Trixie Mattel, wakes up in a pool of sweat every night saying, there is an army of women coming for my job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Know?
They're all like, it's just spooky and weird.
If I were Trixie, yeah. I would totally spoof. I would do a little short film where she's Trixie and like everybody she encounters with is some version of her.
Absolutely.
Well, absolutely. You saw what happened with Taylor Swift last night, mm-hmm, with John Travolta.
I love that for Jade. That was so amazing.
Jade Jolie was dressed as also Taylor Swift.
And he went
Swift.
To hand her the award and hug her. And she's like, no.
I'm not her.
Right.
Best day amazing. Of Jade Jolie's life.
Oh, I love Jade. Talk about a sweetheart. Absolutely love Jade. You know, oh my gosh.
Well, were you gonna say something beyond Trixie besides they're all clones?
Just the fact that they're all clones now. So first of all, you know, it was Fame, you know, at Miss Fame and everybody painting like her, or then for a while it was everybody painting like India Farah, you know, with the really, you know, cut, you know, highlighting and contoured, you know. Now you got people, you know, well, then they were trying to emulate Trixie, and then out came, you know, what's her name that we were talking about, Chicago, Kim Chi, you know. I mean, to me, it's like, where is everybody's originality anymore? Why are you all painting like each other?
Because they watch the videos on YouTube,
right,
and figure out
right,
do it.
You know,
Fausto dressed up as Trixie Mattel once for Halloween, and he was given like $5 blowjobs in the back alley.
Oh, I
was
love that.
$5 blowjobs. There were $40 blowjobs.
40 cents.
But people were like treating me as if I was, because Brian and I kind of looked facially the same, and I shaved, you know.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Like, I was padded, and people were just, they all thought that was his real ass and thighs. It was his.
And I was so mad about that.
And were you excited?
No.
You were like, honey,
I was in the basement of the jackhammer and dressed up as Trixie Mattel.
Oh my God.
There are photographs. And people are like, Trixie's really lost her mind.
Wow.
It got back to Trixie. She was a little bit like, oh, I guess.
Not luck.
She was had mixed feelings about it. Mm. She was flattered that I did it. And at the same time, she was like,
did she tell you this?
Yeah, we talked about it. And she was like, don't do it again.
Well, at least you got to do it once.
Oh, yeah. It was supposed to be a combination of Superman, Lady Bunny, and Trixie Mattel.
Oh, my God.
It was like a spin the wheel kind of thing. You know?
Right.
So it was a cute look.
Right.
What are you dressing? Halloween's just around the corner. I can't think of what to wear.
Okay, so let me tell you about the two holidays a year that I'm really not a fan of. Well, it's not that I'm not a fan of it, but for years of, like, let's go back to when I used to work at the Copa in Fort Lauderdale as one of the headliners. And at Halloween, every gay guy comes out in drag, you know, and it's their first time in drag. Yeah. And they walk up to you because they know you, and they're like, don't I look amazing? You're like, absolutely. You know, and
you look so good. I would have never guessed that was you.
Right. And then they come back a little drunk later and they're like, aren't I fabulous? And absolutely. And then they come back a little bit later and they're really toasted drunk and they like flip their wig, and sometimes it'll fall off when they flip it, or but they're flipping it at you and they go, I'm more fabulous than you. And you're like, absolutely.
And more drunk.
Right. You know, so it's not one of my favorite years, but I will tell you that 3 years ago, I went to work. I was laying over in LA and I was playing with one of my dearest girlfriends, and I brought two Cher wigs with me. Ooh. And I painted my face as Cher and showed up on the plane in my uniform as Cher. And Gloria Allred, the lawyer gets on, and I'm the flight attendant at the door greeting. I'm not the number one flight attendant. I'm not the purser, but I'm the assistant at the. And she gets on, and she goes, "Oh my gosh!" I'm like, "Oh my god, don't ask. I'll just sit down." And she went, "Oh my god!" I go, "Don't. I got to get a better manager." And that's so brilliant. Then I'm doing the safety demo in coach as Cher, and people are like, they're not knowing what to think, you know, that I'm standing up there.
Oh my god.
Of course, I did a wig change midway through the flight, you know, and they were like, and people, when I'm coming through doing the services, they're like, has anybody ever told you you look like Cher? I'm like, no. No, nobody's ever told me that, okay?
Oh my god, that's the best story ever.
It was hilarious. All the agents had to come down and take pictures with me, and I just flew yesterday with a girl that flew with me on that trip, Dana. She goes, I'll never forget, it was 3 years ago. She goes, everybody was rushing down. She goes, you were standing there, and it was Cher in a uniform, and it was funny, because I was really nervous, because we're not supposed to get, you know, in costume. But I didn't get in costume. I stayed in my uniform. Mm-hmm. I just did my makeup and wore black hair. I can't help that, you know, just...
So you hate Halloween. What's the other holiday you hate?
New Year's.
Okay.
You know.
Drunk people.
Yeah.
Amateur night.
Yeah.
Amateur night.
Amateurs.
Candy Stratton is available for bookings as a Cher impersonator through
ScreamingQueens.com.
Tell them Feast of Fun sent you.
Not a sponsor of this podcast, but she could be.
But we could call and work on her. She should be a sponsor. She listens, doesn't she?
For 15 seasons now, Alex has been listening
we
to
love
Alex. Alex is a paid subscriber, he accesses many of our fabulous vintage classic podcasts, mm-hmm. thousands of them, in fact, mm-hmm. with interviews with LGBT visionaries, luminaries, RuPaul talking about Candy Stratton talking about RuPaul. It's all there.
You know,
and more.
I love Alex. You know, he mm-hmm. was a visionary with ScreamingQueens.com. Mm-hmm. He really was. And many people have stole a lot of his ideas and that, but nobody is as good and as the originator as Alex is with that.
Well, one thing is, if you're LGBT, honey, you're always duplicated, yeah. but never replicated.
As absolutely. They say, it's gay is generations ahead of yesterday.
Absolutely.
That's vivacious.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun, where you can get sneak peeks at behind the scenes and some goodies that you can't get anywhere else.
Upcoming episodes of Cooking with Drag Queens, all new episodes just around the corner.
So wait,
for the fall. Yes.
Are they all from RuPaul's Drag Race?
No. None of them.
Look, wait.
Wait.
What? This Cooking with Drag Queens?
Yes, because this season is...
There are zero... Well, actually, there are a few.
There are a few, because we...
But Jade, we knew them beforehand.
Jade
actually was the first Rue girl we ever interviewed.
Yes, first Rue girl we ever had on the podcast.
And Jade and Monica Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
You call her the... She changed her name to... Monica de Jesus Anaya.
And
so Mark calls her
the Annihilator.
I like that. I like that. Every time he says that, she acts like it's the first time.
Well, you know, probably is. Well,
I
you
love
know,
her.
We usually see each other out in the bar. So it's like, I never, like, if I talk to you about something in a bar, I never hold you to it.
Right.
You know, who knows who's been drinking what?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, people drink in a bar?
I know. Well, people come up to me like, I met you 5 years ago. I'm like, at Clark's, that was 3 o'clock in the morning. You expect me to remember that?
Wow, you guys drink? You know?
I don't drink any alcohol, but
not much anymore.
I do enjoy a little white wine sangria on New Year's mm-hmm. Eve.
I love that.
Do you like it?
I
what do you like in your white wine sangria?
Whatever you give me.
Okay.
I like it with fruits. I like mangoes.
You can't have sangria without fruit.
Oh, some cheap places will put the fruit after the fact.
No,
I want it to soak.
Yes, because
I don't
then
like
you
want peach.
Eat,
I want
right,
mango
day ahead of time.
Right, yes. Because then you have to eat the fruit afterwards, and that's when you really get drunk. Not that I would know any of this because you know
white wine sangria is my go-to drink,
right?
And you put a little bit of brandy in it or some rum.
I'm really upset and shocked that you didn't have some sitting here. You know
I'd be happy to make you some. We have a watermelon and we have the white wine and the rum. We could do it,
but we should have been sipping it during the podcast, you know. Kind of like in the room with RuPaul's, where everybody's drinking their
Interior Illusions.
Yeah,
lounge.
The Interior Illusions.
They burnt that to the ground.
Did they?
Yeah. There was Stacey Lane Matthews came on the show. You can listen to it in our archives. Forbes, feastoffun.com/plus, where she claims that the reason that season three had to be stopped mid-season was because Mimi M. First and Shangela got into such a fight that they had to stop production and turn to the lawyers and say, what do we do?
Oh, wow.
But she's the blood only one who's saying that.
Blood was drawn.
I wouldn't be surprised. I've met Mimi M. First because I was living out in Philadelphia being based out there. And yeah, she's quite a character. She's, as somebody would say, she's got a very colorful personality. Mm.
She is a very one of our diehard regular guests for a long time, and she is a dynamo in the drag scene, and especially in Philly. And she hosts a drag pageant that's hotly contested. Just this is the thing: is these drag pageants, people who are outside of it, they're just like, "What's the big deal?" It's just. You know, people
but once
in costume.
You're in that world.
You mean the Drag Wars contest that she has?
Yeah. There's some shit goes down. It's like, it gets ugly, honey. It gets spicy and hot.
Hot.
Yeah. Just like the next year's Miss Trans USA pageant.
It's coming up. September 21st in Milwaukee. I'm giving it up already. Can you believe it?
You're going to have to give up the crown?
I am. And the Mr. Apps Heart is giving up his title. We're crowning our first. So Apps is the emeritus. And we're crowning our very first trans guy this year, Mr. Trans. And you guys should come up. I would love for
I would
you guys
love
to come
it. What
up.
Day is that of the week?
It's Saturday. Do you work weekends? You said
I
though.
I do.
Can
what
you
time
swap?
Does it start though?
It's early, and it's not going to be like it's not going to go on forever. Okay. It's a boom 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 boom, and it starts at the red carpet's at 5:00, the pageant's at 6:00. It should be hopefully over by 8:30.
It'll be over by 12:00.
It's a school night.
No,
kind of thing.
No, I have worked very hard with the owners this year, and we have really streamlined it, and it's going to be great. It's.
Do you know where the venue? Do you know where it's at?
It is. It's at the Marcus Performing Arts Center in Milwaukee. And here's a funny story. My very first pageant I ever won was Miss Wisconsin Continental in 1983, and it was held at the Marcus Performing Arts Center. And guess what? I'm giving up my finale pageant at the same place I started.
Well, are you going to be able to give a speech?
Huh?
Are you going to be able to give
a
speech?
Well, I am.
I hope you get to say that there.
I am
it's going to make some people cry.
I am. And you know what? Even though the pageant is not about performers, because I am a performer, they're letting me open up the pageant as Cher.
Awesome.
So it's going to be a phenomenal opening production. So I'm excited about it. So...
Candy Stratton, you're filled with so much goodness and so sweet.
I love you guys. You haven't changed a bit in 10 years. I love you.
Well, thank you.
I love
you. I've only gotten better.
You did.
Harder.
You know what? You know what?
Meaner.
And that body of yours is rocking.
I'm trying, girl. It's like, you know, I had all this back problems today. And I went and did legs. And it cleared it up.
Oh, are you working out with a personal trainer or just following Paula?
I just bother people.
Do
for
you?
Advice, yeah. I have a lot of bodybuilder friends.
I bet.
On Instagram
YouTube stuff. And I secretly want to have sex with all of them. And
all
they all
them.
Know it.
Wow.
But they're all straight. Most of them are,
we'll show you some of our favorites after the podcast.
Oh. Do they listen to your podcast?
Some of them do, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I love you, Thomas.
Oh, wow. Does Thomas tell you he loves you back?
No. Hey, we're friends. Mm-hmm. But he works in a gay bar.
Thomas doesn't think anybody loves him.
Why?
Because he's so beautiful, he's miserable.
Is he gay or straight?
He's straight.
Straight to what?
He's straight identifying.
Yes.
Straight to what?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Straight to misery. He's so beautiful. We met him at the Arnold Expo in Columbus, Ohio, and he's put him on blast. He talks about all this stuff himself, so I'm not saying anything private here. Game of Swoles on Instagram, Thomas Terry, one of the most beautiful, physiques. I mean, he looks like he's made chiseled out of marble. And he's a boy. He's a guy. He's like, I like cars and, my girlfriend got cheating on me. And,
wow.
He's absolutely stunning. And he's a very sweet guy. He works in a gay bar now. And I said, this is a good place for you to be because you need to be around people who love you.
And will admire your physique.
Admire your physique.
And offer you money to have sex.
How about just being like Johnny, what's his name? Johnny Rapid, who is, you know, well, he did identify as straight, doing all gay porn, you know, but now has come out as being bisexual, but he has a girlfriend.
Well, I don't think he's going to be doing that. He says he won't do escort work. He was not going to do porn. He's very square.
Not that I'm advocating it, you know.
But a lot of trans people and a lot of bodybuilders share common ground.
Right.
Right. And it's not just because, you know, they're pumping their bodies with all kinds of juices, but
what's getting the body you want to have.
It's about pursuing your dreams in a world that looks at your body and wants to ridicule you or chastise you.
Talking about pumping, you know, it's
pumping party,
you know, like on Pose. I mean, like I told you, that's actually a true story.
Tell them the story.
So
the first season
when Candy and Lulu go to find somebody that does silicone work, they go to see this woman who says she's a nurse for a doctor up on the east side. And she's a real woman. I'm not going to lie to you. I had Joanne pump me years ago. Her name was Joanne.
And she's a person that exists in the real world.
She did. I don't know if she's still alive, but she worked on a lot of the girls, and she trained some girls to do her work.
You did not go to the second person that Candy went to that got her sick.
I did not go to.
Who eventually went and helped them hide that. She got a reprieve in the second season.
Right, that now smells like pine, you know, in the last episode. What's that smell? Pine, darling. Pine. I'm a woman who loves her scents.
Yeah. You actually were a regular at the Kit Kat Club, and Dominique Jackson for a while performed there, but you guys never...
Angelica.
It was Angelica. Ross.
Angelica and I knew Angelica back then. I actually have ran into her a couple times in the airport before she got on the show. I'm so proud of her. Mm-hmm. I'm so very proud of her. She started her own business here in Chicago, you know, for the trans community. She has been an advocate. She's been a voice. She got on the show. Well, first she was on that other one that was
Her Story.
Her story. And I couldn't be proud of her see her, you know, how far she's come and what a great role model for everybody.
You were
everybody.
Saying that at the Kit Kat when she was a performer, she wouldn't wear
makeup. So I know Tracy Ross can verify this with me. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to say to her, put a little more makeup on. She's like, no, girl, I'm not going to wear any makeup. I don't need all that makeup. I'm not wearing it. And Tracy was like, girl, I kept trying to get her to wear. She has more makeup on now in Pose than she ever wore a Kit Kat, but it don't matter.
She's wiser now.
I'm sure it's the show. Yeah. But, you know, but she's always been absolutely beautiful no matter what. She never, let me tell you, she never needed any of that makeup. But, you know, I love to see her in a little makeup because I giggled, you know, that she never wear that much. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, they got her wearing it. But she's amazing. I'm so happy for her.
Was it hard to see your gal pal, spoiler alert for the second season, they killed off Candy's character?
Yeah, that was. But, you know, they really didn't kill her off.
Well, I know.
She's been in every episode since killing her off.
Magical realism there.
Right, you know.
But was it hard? Because you know Angelica Ross and seeing her character being, you know, in funeral.
But it's
tough. I was crying. I barely know her.
Oh, of course I cried. I cried over the whole subject, you know, of sadly, you know, one of our trans women of color being murdered. I mean, we're already up to, I think, 15 this year, 15 alone trans women of color that have been murdered, along with, you know, a trans man, you know, in Dayton and in that shooting. And, you know, it's got to quit. It's got to stop these people. And especially from these guys that, you know, are attracted to trans women, yet, you know, they can't, you know, for whatever reason, guilt or whatever in their head, you don't need to kill anybody because you love somebody. You know, you need to accept yourself, you know?
Yeah, Alexandra Billings said a big factor in why people have a hard time accepting trans people is because they have a hard time seeing somebody pursuing their dreams.
Absolutely.
And a trans person living their authentic selves reminds them of their own dreams they've never chased.
Absolutely. I'm proud of Alex because, you know, she and I, like I said earlier, we started out together, you know, and I'll never forget seeing Alex when I was working at La Cage. She was working as a little boy stripper at Victoria's. I think it was Victoria's, which was, you know, from the movie, but I think it was called Victoria's. And then she started doing drag, and then she got hired and worked with us over at La Cage, and it was her. We sounded like a fruit dish. It was patty cakes or like a cake. It was patty cakes, ginger spice, Shantae, and candy slice. You know, if that didn't sound like some, you know, fucked up dinner plan, you know, I don't know what did. You know,
well,
dessert
I'll
plate.
Have seconds. Candy Stratton, thank you so much again.
I love you guys.
Talk to you all night long.
I love you guys.
Congratulations on the pageant. Miss Trans USA is happening in September.
Yep. So, Mr. and Miss TransUSA.com. You know, you can see it and learn about it on there. Come up and see us and, you know, support our trans brothers and sisters that are just wanting to get a voice out there and be role models. So, come up.
Thank you so much, Candy.
Thank you, Candy.
Thanks, you guys, so much.
Thank
Bye,
you,
guys.
Bye.